you know, in New York State, less than half of parents know about teacher shortages. And so, you also have, I don't know where we are in New York City in terms of teacher shortages, but parents don't know how to do that. And obviously, there's issues around pay and profession. And I've seen, like, all around the country, public health professionals and education professionals are leaving because of how brutal the last 3 years were. We ought to just be honest about that. COVID affected everybody, but it didn't affect everybody the same way.
I don't think we can ever classify anything as a benefit just because the cost was too damn high. So when we're talking about, remote learning as this tool that can benefit students, that is true. It is true that having a remote learning option may benefit students. But the experience that I think so many teachers had, that working families had, was that, many people were talking about remote learning. The parents of my students were remote parenting because they were the ones on the front lines stocking the grocery shelves. They were nurses. They were out there every day, and they couldn't risk bringing the virus home to their kids.
Those were some of the voices from the panels at City and State's 2022 Education Summit, the second part of this series of episodes from the event. The previous episode featured New York City Chancellor David C. Banks and his vision for New York City schools for the 2022-2023 school year. In this episode, city and state legislators, as well as those education partners, discuss education in New York from K through 12 to the college level. What major concerns were addressed and how can they be solved? Let's find out. I'm Miss Mack, and this is Hall Pass Break. This is an edited version of two panels addressing education concerns in the state of New York. Unfortunately, you will hear some background noise and some explicit reactions to the responses made by the panelists. The first panel, titled The Current State of Public Education in New York, discusses the impact COVID-19 had on K through 12 schools and what are the next steps. The panel was led by David Bain, Senior Vice President of Analytics and Innovation at Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. Here he begins the introductions of the panelists.
Scotty Rosa, as you know, the state's commissioner of education. But more importantly, someone who's probably held more roles in public education than anyone I've ever met, from a paraprofessional, teacher, principal, superintendent, seems like she could walk into any role and say, yeah, I had that job at some time in my career. And so she's tackled so many challenges. So Dr. Rosa, as you introduce yourself, you know, what's the next challenge? What's the next big thing that you plan on engaging in that you hope to accomplish this year?
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Good morning.
So let me start by saying that personally, I think giving your introduction that having been the teacher, principal of special ed in District 75, and also principal in Washington Heights, the first community school in New York City. Also, superintendent, by the way, senior superintendent at the time, although I wasn't a senior at the time, and then chancellor and currently commissioner. And for me personally, is the issue, the challenge of knowing and seeing what's possible in our city and our state. And knowing that we have some of the most amazing schools, district schools, and yet we have some of the most challenging communities and places. And bridging that gap and knowing what we know and knowing the investments that are made in some places, but not in all places. So for me personally, the biggest challenge is shining the light in terms of equity and what is possible. We know what quality looks like. The difference is that, unfortunately, quality resides in some communities for some people, and so for some people's children, and not for all children. So that many times we're challenged by trying to create and take care of other people's children the same way that we take care of our very own. So for me, the biggest challenge is knowing, seeing what's possible, and making sure that that gets turned into an action and shining the light on what's possible.
Thank you so much. So our next panelist, if you haven't met her before, Councilmember Rita Joseph. Councilmember is now the head of the Education Committee, but has served 22 years as a classroom teacher here in New York City, and really was in the classroom up until just last December. You know, and so, you know, when Chancellor Banks asked the room how many were classroom educators, and I think there were about 10% at most, maybe to raise their hand, that are full-time educators right now. That means about 90% of us probably don't know what it was like to be a teacher during the pandemic. Now, can you tell us a little bit about what it was like and what would shock us the most about what it was like being a teacher the last few years?
Sure. Good morning, everyone. What a day March 16 was when we got the call that were on pause. I had to pivot real quick with my fellow educators and my students. How do I move them from modern brick to virtual classroom? What does that look like? I had to meet the needs of my immigrant parents who spoke my English. How do I move them from that? How do I move my educators that was stuck to chalkboards? That was challenging. So being in the center of that was a lot of things that came. The digital divide, the food insecurities, really stuck in my head. So I created, right away pivoted, WhatsApp was my to-go thing to create parent leaders, where my food banks were, food distribution, where was I setting up my iPad, and I shout out my husband who's a nurse who was running around picking up iPads as I was setting them up in my house, because at the same time I was also the tech person for that building. So I was setting up iPads, sending them out, creating videos in different languages and calling fellow colleagues. Can you create a Spanish video on how to set up virtual classrooms? And I'm shooting it out, setting up iPads. And at the time, I was still running for office, but I made a choice. Children's Center, 22 years, these kids are mine. And I ran, I taught in the morning, and I ran my campaign in the evening. Because students first, and I'm dedicated to New York City children. And I told them that I would be their ally and champion. So I'm here for them, and to make sure that we deliver, like Dr. Rosa said, a quality education with access and equity.
Thank you. Because we need some way to really balance this out. Between Betty and Rita and myself, doing like 75 years of leading school districts and schools and those things. And so we need someone with a totally different perspective, someone who thought about things in different ways. And Jeffrey Cloud, the former founder of Global Strategy Group, is a nationally renowned expert in policy and strategy and polling and really judging public perceptions on topics such as public education that changes in public education. So Jeff, just give us a flair of help us understand how has public perception of teachers and education changed over the last couple of years?
Broadly, what we've seen in New York are really worried, furrowed brows of parents. And parents are really concerned, and they're concerned about two things which sometimes get posited against each other, but which from a parent's perspective, I know this will make all sense to you, both exist fully. The first is about their child's academic progress and what's going on in schools, and are they behind, are they on track, if they've always had difficulties or parts of things, how is that all shaping up? And then the second is a social, emotional worry and concern, which has to do with lots of things around, and that exists, and we're seeing that express itself in all sorts of ways. And the pandemic clearly has interrupted the ways in which New York serves special needs students, students whose first language isn't English, and students with disabilities. Thank you.
And so we know from research that the teacher is the most important in-school factor for student learning. The teacher's belief about the students, the teacher's effectiveness. We also know that teaching has become an incredibly challenging profession. And, you know, perceptions of the profession have become very mixed. So I'd like to just kind of start with Commissioner Rosa. What can we do to help our teachers, but also what can we do to elevate the profession in New York State?
I think that we are in a moment that, you know, we talk about elevating the profession as if, you know, in some ways I hear that language all the time, and it's unsettling for me because it's almost as if the profession is not treated or looked at. You know, just as I said, language matters. I think we use a lot of phrases and language that really, in many ways, really diminishes and takes the profession for granted in many ways, and takes the profession to a place as if, you know, there's this messaging out there that who wants to be a teacher? You can only be a teacher if you can't be A, B, C, D. You know, if you can't go into technology, if you can't go in, but in fact, it is one of the most noble. Everyone sitting in this room, if you close your eyes, you can attribute many of your own belief system, besides your parents and your family, and your cores, to many of those individuals that have touched your lives as you've gone through school leaving and as you've gone through the experience of teaching and learning. I do think we have to really change the narrative about, one, about teaching, two, about the way we recruit teachers, the way we support teachers during and sustain them, and the way we help them rethink, rebuild, and really truly re-engage and love what they do. And so part of that is financial, and you know, what we pay them. Second is how we treat them, how we speak about teachers, and what are our expectations in terms of teaching, and how we're seeing it throughout this country right now, how we are putting guardrails on many of our teachers teaching in terms of critical thinking, in terms of how they teach history, the complete history, not the single story. So I really truly believe that we have to take the language that we use, one, to describe teachers, two, how we think about teachers, and three, the incentives. And instead of thinking about how we elevate those teachers, we should be thinking about, my God, they should be thought about as individuals, especially during this pandemic. They were first responders in those schools. Mm-hmm. They were first responders in communities. And they were first responders to children's social, emotional, as well as putting their masks on the children first in many kinds of situations. Let's really, truly make an effort to create a profession and not talk so much about elevating it, but really having it take its place at the table. Because right now we're treating it as if they're outside the door trying to get in. And in some cases, they're not even pulling a chair to the table. So I would submit that we have to truly, truly do a better job in how we speak about our teachers, educators, and people who really go into this work, because this is God's work. Thank you.
Councilmember Joseph was definitely one of those first responders. So a year ago, how could you have been supported better?
I'm getting the tools that I needed in my tool. I had to go out and seek for them on my own. I didn't have that support. It's Dr. Rosa's comment, amen. The messaging, see how the chancellor said New York City public schools, educators need to be uplifted, not only uplifted, celebrated every day. During the pandemic, I celebrated my teachers. I'm not a principal, but however they were my colleagues, I called in. I know those, especially those that are struggling with the technology piece, I would call in this wellness check. Just like my students, they would get a wellness check in the morning. When I go online and I go through all the classes, because I was also the ENL coordinator for my building. I wore many hats just to make sure that my kids were getting the resources that they need. So I would call my teacher, like, how are you today? Are you able to log in? Do you need me to come in and provide tech support for you? Do you need me to come in? I call parents, do you need me to come in? That's the job we did. When I started in 1999, my starting salary was $31,000. The first check I got, I cried. Because at the time, I was working at the United Nations and I wanted to leave that profession to come in and make a difference. Because my grandparents raised me and they were like, you gotta give back. So through education, I wanted to give back. And when I went into my school building, I went to a district that was affluent. And when I walked into my school building, I was like, oh no, this cannot happen. And I started working to make changes. And I said, if I ever taught at a school, my kids should be able to attend that school. And that's what I did, and like you, I created the first de facto community school to bring in the resources and the partnerships with the nonprofits and the corporates to make sure that my students had the support that they needed, from eyeglasses to dental wear to backpack to food to whatever was needed to remove some of those barriers. And as I was teaching and I started noticing more of my students entering the shelter system, so I had a lot of my students who were also living in temporary housing. So make sure that PS6 was a place that removed the barriers to allow our students to thrive. So there, Ms. Joseph is here at the table. Dr. Joseph, I brought a chair and a table to sit for my educators.
After the first panel, the second panel titled Plans for Higher Education in the New Normal addressed the issues of connecting K through 12 schools to higher education. During the time introductions were given, I had the privilege of taking a photo with Councilwoman Rita Joseph, which is why in this part you will not hear the speakers introduce themselves. The panel was moderated by Adam Balkin, an executive producer at CBS News. The second panel included William Murphy, Higher Education Deputy Commissioner for the State Education Department, New York City Council Member Eric Dinowitz, Joseph Scarali, Dean for Online Education, and Larry L. Luing, School of Business at Berklee College. Baron McCombs, Region Education Services Specialist, 1st Army Recruiting Brigade of U.S. Army New York City Recruiting Battalion, and Don Applers, Managing Director of Network Expansion at NAF. In this abbreviated segment, they discuss the changes happening at the college level.
So these kids now who have been learning, who learned online for 3 years, just read an article on the AP this morning. I think the headline was, I'm going to college and I'm very underprepared. We have this generation of kids who might not have learned as much as they should have. Now that they're in college, colleges, I mean, do they lower their standards? Do they have to figure out some catch-up courses? How do we address this generation? I guess, you know, younger kids, the teachers in middle school and high school can try to make up for it. But these kids who were in later middle school or high school during the pandemic, are we going to have a big generation of kids who are just, who aren't as prepared, and now what do we do about that?
Yeah, if I could just take an initial stab at that, Adam. Historic investments over the last 2 years, our opportunity programs, our early college high school programs, to make sure that we get into the schools and really start to deal with in a partnership between district and college initiatives, and really just trying to make sure that you're addressing that issue of how are we making sure that our students, who a lot of times don't have access to higher education or don't have access to graduate school or the professions that they want to get into, how do we make sure we're doing it in, you know, a proactive manner? And the most important way to do that is to make sure that you're addressing these through partnerships with the districts and with our higher education institutions, and if there's industry partners that need to be involved. And you know, hopefully, you know, we're taking a more proactive approach to that.
What is the, is there one big thing, one big change in education, higher education, that's happening now, or is really gonna stick around and going to happen, that everyone in this room just didn't experience when we were in college?
Well, I think the word is focus. I think you're going to see a lot more of higher ed focusing on we talked a lot today about careers. We talked a lot about different pathways. That was the subject. I think there's going to be a lot more focus on careers, on what students are going to do for a living, how they're going to be prepared to change careers, how they might end up like me, be 45 years old and their industry disappears and they have to change their career. So that's what I think the difference is going to be. More of a focus, less on general education, more on careers. And I think that's where it's at.
And I'm going to say creativity, because what you're doing, kids who are entering your classroom right now, by the time they graduate high school, the program, those jobs don't even exist. Those career fields don't even exist. So you have to be very careful and provide the type of education that's not only going to allow them to succeed in the global marketplace, but also to lead in the global marketplace. Because their competition is going to be competition, not just the guy next to them. They are in competition economically with the folks worldwide. And if we lose our lead in the global marketplace, then it's going to affect us very dearly as a country. So creativity, allow the kids the opportunity to think and contribute to their own education, and make them partners in that learning process.
Right. Adam, I would say, just not to repeat and overlap, but I think what you might start to see now is the emphasis and shifting to access, opportunity, and success versus a model of competition and prestige and trying to chase down the U.S. new rankings. So, you know, I think we might start to see a little bit more of a shift in that.
I would say that what we'll see is an increase in partnership and collaboration. If there's anything that we can be able to see, is that we can't do this by ourselves. It's going to take industry partners, it's going to take educators, it's going to take business leaders, it's going to take college presidents, it's going to take legislators, elected officials, in order to ensure that our students are getting what it is that they need and deserve in order to be prepared for tomorrow. Ensuring that our students have the skills, the resources, the opportunities, if anything, most importantly, that they have the opportunities to engage and to be exposed to the things that are going to help them learn and be prepared for what it is that they'll experience. And if I can share very quickly, you know, for me, you know, I'm a product of New York City, grew up in Brooklyn, son of a Haitian mom, immigrant who was a New York City cab driver for over 20 plus years of my life. And if there's anything she taught me in her experience and what she imparted on me is, look, service to others is the greatest gift that you can give. And we talk about education, and everyone in this room, is that collectively the service that we provide in our individual spaces, once we cross those borders and partner and collaborate, the magic truly happens. And so I just want to encourage you all just to remain collaborative and be open to different perspectives to ensure that, again, that our students are getting what it is that they need in order to be successful.
I hope this edited version of the City and State's 2022 Education Summit gives you some insight into how New York City, state, and higher education leaders are addressing the needs of educators at every level. If you would like to hear both panels in its entirety, you can go to YouTube under City and State and look for 2022 Education in New York Summit. Tune into the final part of this series that includes United Federation of Teachers President Michael Mulgrew. I want to thank Educators for Excellence for inviting me to the Education Summit. Big shout out to their staff members, Shundrees Tucker, Chanel Hannibal, and Elvis Santana for their support. Thanks to Forever Educator City Councilwoman Rita Josephs for taking a photo with me and other teachers. Thanks to City and State for the Education Summit, the Museum of Jewish Heritage for providing a space for the event, and last but not least, thanks to my cheerleader and supporter of the podcast, Nadella Nakobe. Be sure to subscribe to Hall Pass Break on iTunes, Spotify, Spreaker, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. You can follow the show on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and TikTok. And be sure to visit hallpassbreak.com for previous episodes and this episode as well. Music was provided by Scott Nice, Macchiato Funky, and Perdita. The quote this week is by American philosopher and educator John Dewey. Education is not preparation for life. Education is life itself. Thanks for listening.